Welcome to Comics,
episode
242.
This week, we talk about
Justice Society, Volume 1.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast. Actually, also old Dr. Fate. Because we read new Dr. Fate.
That's true. Yeah. New Dr. Fate was pretty good. After reading, I refreshed by reading the synopses on Comic Vine as well, because the plots were really... There were a lot of things happening. And every time they... Golden Age Flash, Golden Age Green Lantern. Like, they couldn't just say their names. Oh, man. Freon.
Freon?
In, like, the first issue, Brainwave makes them hallucinate that there's a Freon gas leak. The same gas that destroys the ozone layer.
Oh man, is it just me or does Brainwave's eyes look like fucking like the googly eyes? The stickers?
Yes.
Oh my god.
He's like, my body is so beautiful. And it's like, dude.
Creepy fool. Bro, you just creeped me out a little bit here.
He looks like Nothing a crazy, about... like Jack Kirby drawing.
Mm-hmm.
Took a couple screen caps of some of the best. I'll post them on Facebook later.
Oh, my favorite is the Grundy one that I posted on. I don't know if you guys saw it.
Yes. You should post it on the Welcome to Comics one.
All right.
You know what's great?
So good.
Born on a Monday.
This trade ends with a Power Girl panty shot.
Yes, I know. I'm trying to look up. There's some... did either of you read the like letters to the editor pages that were in these?
No.
I did not have them in
Buddy.
Are they really bad? The letters?
I've got some special ones.
Okay. I did know there's
for the show.
There's BB gun ads everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like
when
your old gun's not good enough, ask your dad for a new gun.
And fucking muscle supplements too.
Yeah.
All over.
Oh, I think my favorite one, though, was, like, model plastic vans. And it's like, get in on the van craze. I wasn't aware there was a van craze in the 70s.
Apparently, it was the hotness.
Yeah.
Well, those vans with the murals on the side of, like, Frank Frazetta art. People had, like, wizards and shit on the side of their vans.
I would still do
you know
that.
What I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
I would drive a van that was like a replica of an A-Team's van, though.
That would be kind of sick. Need to watch more A-Team to have that really be something I should do.
I should rewatch that, too.
Yeah.
I want to rewatch MASH. And
MASH
then I don't.
MASH is phenomenal balls.
I know! And the finale is really good.
My wife and I just finished watching all 11 seasons, and there are some less good episodes. They're all pretty good episodes though. But you're right, that finale for MASH is like, I kept hearing that it was a good finale, and honestly, I'd only like caught episodes of MASH here and there, and not really. But after watching all 11 seasons, that finale is everything you want it to be. It's terrible, and not like it's a bad show, but like it shows you the horror of war in the absolutely most perfect way, and it's difficult to watch, and it's tough, and it makes you cry, and it makes you laugh if you watch the whole thing, and it's like, it's a perfect, perfect television finale. Well, you guys ready to talk about this week's comic?
Yeah.
Sure.
This week's comic.
All right, this week we read Justice Society Volume 1 by Paul Levitz and Jerry Conway. This collected issues 58 to 67 of the old 1970s run of All-Star Comics, which became All-Star Comics Presents Justice Society. This was written by Jerry Conway with pencil by Rio Estrada most of the time, and inks from Wally Wood. But the pencil and ink work, like all comics from the 50s, 60s, 70s, the ink, pencil, all that stuff get jumbled up all the time. But some super cool secondary artists that came up in this. Keith Giffen did pencils from 60 to 63, very early on in his career. And Bob Layton did inks in 66 and 67, early on in his career. These are both guys that we've read before on the show, and Keith Giffen is one of our favorite artists. So it was really cool to see some of him like pop up early on in his career in this run. Which gets to what I was going to say later in the show about the art, but like, man, I'm always so sad when I read comics from the 70s that have great line art like this, because it could look so good if it just was written, like if it was in another era. Like, the line art is so good, but the colors are bland because the printing sucked and the pages are cramped because that was the style. But you can see such potential for good art on some of these pages. It's amazing. It's just like, oh, 10 more years, guys. 10 more years. Come back, everyone.
Yeah, seriously. It's like, I don't know, the budget here was so bad, and it really detracts from what could have been much stronger. Right? It's like, I don't know, just if they had a wider range of colors or even like cleaner printing, it would have been a lot better.
And it's interesting to see how it gets better even just in these couple issues. Because by the end, there's a full page spread in one of these issues with Xanadu, the like Nemoidian lizard or whatever it was. And then there's a couple, okay, this is going to sound funny, but there's a couple good panty shots of Power Girl. But like, they're like half pages, there's good action and movement, like, it sounds funny because it's that's the shot, but, you know, like, honestly, they're drawn pretty well.
What I will say is, stylistically, art from the 70s can be really startling if you're not used to it, because they like to do things like the floating heads. Like, it will just, you know, to save time on drawing body and, like, a background scene, they'll just have a head and then a dialogue bubble. And it's like, you could have filled in the rest. Or just, I don't know, like the faces. In the first issue we read, I think when we first meet Power Girl and she, like, you know, swoops in and saves Flash and Wildcat, there's a panel with her where I was like, oh my god, she looks like the stereotypical like gag gift blow up doll. And well, she, you know, her mouth is like slightly open and her eyes are like creepy, and I'm like, I don't think that
awkwardly drawn lips.
Yeah, I don't think that was in any way the intent. It just, maybe it's like a factor of the printing being weird and the art being a little like, you know, retro, but oh man.
Did they have those kinds of things in the 70s?
Probably.
Those love dolls?
I want to say so. I mean, this is also the era, like, this is the golden age of pornography, so I imagine there were blow up dolls in the 70s.
Yeah, there had to have been. If not, then startling coincidence.
And that's the stereotype, right? A bunch of nerdy writers and artists in a room together. What's their reference for what a woman looks like?
It's like, especially, yeah, especially with Power Girl.
Yeah.
If it were anyone else. But, you know, I think that they actually did her art pretty well throughout. She still has her classic look. It's just, she's like extra voluptuous this time.
Well, and it's interesting. A lot of people think she starts out without the boob window, and they think the boob window came later. But a lot of people forget these first couple issues, her first appearance is with the boob window, and then they take it away.
Yeah,
they actually
partway through this run.
Yeah.
Which was super weird. Did they actually explain it, or did she just drop it?
So this is, I don't know if you guys read the after comment. Actually, I asked you guys before whether or not you read the things afterwards. A writer writes in, you know, because all the way back in the 70s, they were doing this. Like, you write into the DC Comics and talk about what you want to talk about. And they have, like, a letters from fans at the end. And somebody wrote, what happened to Power Girl? Somebody took all the pizzazz out of her costume. Perhaps somebody thought she was simply too hot for the comics page and decided to take her hip-hugging belt and chest circle away. Chest circle. If that's the rationale, it didn't work. As drawn by Wallywood, Power Girl is still too hot to handle. And the only result is that DC's most dynamic heroine is just that much less dynamic. Like, no. It's not about dynamic character. No. It's about boobs. Be serious here. And their response...
So it looks like...
Oh, go.
So on the cover of issue 60... hold on. Sorry. I just lost it. On the cover of issue 64, she has the boob window. Mm-hmm. But then if you go to the first page, it's gone. So she lost it between 63... and 64.
So in 66, that response, they say, as for changes in Power Girl, those were suggested by Wally Wood, who felt they enhanced her attractiveness, .. And when Wally Wood talks to us about women, we just listen attentively. It's like...
Okay.
It's like half decent... Like, it's half the Playboy... like the Playboy writing column. What is that one called? I don't remember. But yeah, it's like... It's kind of like super cheesy and like, what are you doing? But yeah, apparently they thought taking away the boob window would make her hotter. That's why they took it away.
Uh-huh. That's definitely why.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so it's interesting too. This is her first appearance, right?
Yes.
Well, issue 58 is. It's funny, I was reading a little bit about her publication history on Wikipedia, and apparently when Stan Lee was asked about Power Girl in 1978, and he said that he was annoyed about it, and Marvel was considering suing DC because what had happened is after Power Girl was introduced, after Power Man was introduced on Marvel, DC introduced Power Girl, but the reason they wanted to sue is because when Marvel introduced Wonder Man, DC sued them because they already had Wonder Woman.
Not enough adjectives to go around, apparently.
Yeah.
Wonder and Power.
Power. Yeah, they're exclusive. You can't use Wonder if you're Marvel or Power if you're DC.
Yes, those words are trademarked now.
Yeah.
Well, I would say DC won that fight because I think of Power Girl a lot more than I think of Power Man.
Well, because he goes by Luke Cage now.
Yeah. But just in terms of, like, I don't know. I would think Luke Cage and Iron Fist. Like, he hasn't been Power Man for so long.
Yeah, nobody thinks of him as Power Man anymore. So much, in fact, that they have a new character called Power Man.
Because Luke Cage is no longer Power Man.
Well, he's on the Mighty Avengers with Luke Cage. Or he was for a little while. He's like so have you ever seen the cartoon show Ultimate Spider-Man?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So the character there, so Power Man is from that show. He's like a kid who, so I don't know if Luke Cage is in that cartoon, but when he was brought into the comics, at first Luke Cage was mad because Power Man was kind of a crappy hero, and he was like a teenager, so he wasn't yet a man in Luke Cage's eyes. So, but now they're okay. Anyways, we're not even talking about Marvel. So.
I love Luke Cage. So, what did you guys think of Power Girl in this as a character? She's so you guys can tell from reading this that probably she has been a controversial character since day one.
Yeah.
So well, I feel. Oh, go on.
No, go ahead, Jen.
Okay. Yeah, Token Woman first.
Aww.
No. But let's just say her character is very definitely trying to say something to the reader.
Yes. Now, here's actually my main complaint with the comic, and it's that it's super dated. And I'm not saying that it's not even outdated. It just, it tells you its age immediately because she is like so, so in your face, asshole-ish feminist.
Mm-hmm.
And she's more likable later, because here she's just, I mean, she steps in, she saves people, but she's a real asshole about it. And it's less likable than when, like, you know, in contemporary comics, she comes in and, you know, she seems like a nice, friendly person who saves the day. And her whole thing of, I need to prove myself, I'm just as good as any man. And like Star Spangled Kid, you know, makes her the, like, P symbol for her chest as, like, a sign of goodwill. And she just crushes it. It's like, what is her problem? So I think that they were, it's really heavy-handed. And that may have been intentional to, like, you know, show how this kind of behavior makes it hard to fit in on a team. But it also, I'm not sure if it was meant to be critical of that behavior or to just, like, show, oh, this is what an empowered woman looks like. Because if that's the case, that's, like, really terrible.
David?
Oh, sorry. I don't remember actually what I was going to say, so continue.
All right. So I'll chime in. A lot of people say that this comic, this run, and this Power Girl are when DC's long-seated problems with women and feminism began. Right? Because even today, if you're a woman and you go up to a panel at a comic book convention and you ask the DC head editors why they're making these anti-feminist decisions, they'll basically talk you down. And they're quite rude about it. If you want to go, I mean, there's tons of stuff on the internet. Go look some up. I'm not gonna dig up their dirty laundry. But the idea that started here comes from the thought that this Power Girl is not actually a feminist character. This Power Girl is an anti-feminist character. And the guys, everybody, look at how terrible feminists are. Look at how she's just being counterproductive to the team. Like it's supposed to be harsh critique of what feminism looked like to these people in the 70s. And nobody that wrote this will say one way or another anything about this character. The only person who says anything about this character is Wally Wood and Keith Giffen. They love her. They like her as a character now, but they don't talk about this run, so it's hard to say. But a lot of people really criticize this character as being like, okay, but really, this is, if you're trying to like have a feminist empowered woman, this was absolutely the 100% worst way to do it. And maybe it did it on purpose. Like, yeah, you were saying, Jen, like maybe it's a critique. Maybe it's so much that it's too much on purpose.
And it's hard to tell, right? Because if she... So right now, she's the trope of feminist is bitch.
Yeah.
And like if they're trying to show that's not the way to gain equality, that's just being a jerk. Like, I can kind of see that. But if this is genuinely who her character is, you know, there's problems with that, obviously. Like, that's not good character creation, especially for someone that you're holding up as a hero. Because Power Girl, her whole thing is that she wants to be just as respected as Superman, not just in terms of strength, but also in, you know, like her character, and not, you know, being a good person. But she just kind of storms in and is mean to the original members of the JSA and is generally, like, I would not... Would you guys pin her as helpful? Because she does, like, beat people up, but I feel like... I don't know. Like, she doesn't actually seem particularly helpful.
Well, I mean, that whole thing underground was, like, her. She's the one who made the decision, made the call to get themselves captured, and she's the one who got them out of it when they were down there for a while. Like... It's hard. It's so hard to say in this comic because things happen just exactly the way they need to, you know, whether or not it's productive or counterproductive.
Well, I mean, you see the reactions of characters like Flash, where he gets upset that she went against, you know, she went against the whatever they think their modus operandi is, right? he was upset that she put them, he blamed her for them being in that situation, which is true. I mean, she did it on purpose, but that was her plan. She didn't do it out of stupidity.
Yeah.
That's what creates the conflict, right? I mean, Flash gets all upset and then he says that, but for my money, heroism begins at home, right? It's like she should have been.
He says that when Dr. Fate just like runs off.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
No, but like on the one hand, yes, it's her fault. She got down there on captured on purpose. Like everything Flash says is kind of true. But like also Flash, you just wanted to what? Save the two guys, defeat the Injustice League, and not worry why they picked those locations. Not have, like, you didn't want to investigate what their plan was at all. Like, just save the two guys, go back to your townhouse, and wait for them to attack again. Like, that's super short-sighted, Flash. Like, what the fuck were they doing? What was the point to all this? And, like, Power Girl essentially sniffed all that out, more or less, on her own. And, like, that... It's hard to say whether it was a good idea, but it happened, and it worked. I don't know.
I would argue that, like, one of the main themes in this trade is the schism between, like, old and new. Because there's friggin' Star Spangled Kid and his, like, magic vibrator. Like, no, that thing... Rod. God, that... Okay, just a side note here. Like, to me, all the 70s type of narrative and speak is just so innuendo. But aside from that... Like, so it's, you know, the new way of thinking, Star Spangled Kid, like, wants to be independent, and then Power Girl does too, and, you know, they have, like, their old set Justice Society ways, and, like, a lot of the conflict, especially in the earlier issues, is, like, you know, Wildcat and Green Lantern saying, like, hey, you know, we got this, we don't really need you. Especially Wildcat, who is always pinned as, like, old man, right?
Yeah.
Although, what seems weird to me is, like, they're clearly setting up Star Spangled Kid as, like, the new blood, but he's from the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Isn't he, like, the older blood?
He should be. He's kind of like the half-Captain America. He wasn't frozen for as long.
Yeah. Oh, you know what's... So I assume that the comic itself takes place in 1976, like when it's published, and it's contemporary to its time.
Yes.
They act like he should be so confused by the world. But
it's only been 20 years.
Like, yeah, it's been 20 years. And it's like, if you think about Wildcat or Jay Garrick or, you know, The Flash, they were around in the 50s, and they aren't, like, wandering around today being like, what's happening? What is technology? What is
the television?
Yeah. Like, the whole character setup for Star Spangled Kid does not make sense to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think, like, it's old versus new, and we're supposed to see, like, oh, the old guys... you know, have their merit, but they're not sharp and they're not, they don't think as well or something. I don't know. I feel like this comic had really clear themes, but then it didn't actually say much on them. Like, it didn't come to a strong point on any of the things it might have been saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I can, yeah. I mean, it, like, not to harp too much on Power Girl, but, like what you're saying with it not really selling one way or another. Like, on the one hand, you brought up when she crushes the pea that Star Spangled Kid made for her. And, like, okay. On the one hand, bitch move. Because that's just fucking mean. It's like crushing his, like, flower that he gave you or something. But, on the other hand, she's not wrong. Like... the thing he designed for her was basically a feminized version of the male default. Like, that is offensive.
I you suppose.
Know, you know, like, but... oh, you're Power Girl, you're his cousin, so let's just give you the male thing, just, you know, changed. Like, that also, for somebody who's as strong of a strong-willed feminist as Power Girl, you should know better. You really, really should. Or you should try to think better. So, like, her reaction... of not liking it is justified, but she overreacts. And the result is the comic doesn't settle one way or another, you know?
Yeah, I do definitely agree with that. I also feel like, to me, it didn't make sense because I don't view the Superman symbol as inherently masculine or male. So, you know, she could have been like, I'm not him, I'm my own person, and that makes a lot more sense. But when she's like, you're chauvinistic about it, that's weird.
Chauvinistic
because...
piglet.
Yeah. Although that is a good insult.
Still is. 30 years, like 40 years later.
Gonna use that one.
Yeah, I think this is probably the best example showing that they're trying to make a point against feminism. Especially when you put her up against a character like Supergirl, who is in fact the same person, except from an alternate.
Who does wear the S universe. And doesn't have a problem with it.
She embraces it.
Yeah.
And so, they're definitely trying to make a point here. And this is probably the strongest scene in the whole run that puts it out there, right?
Yeah. And I think another one that they don't quite settle on is one that you brought up, Dave, when you put in the Flash Club, but for my money, heroism begins at home. There's like a constant theme in this comic of people just running the fuck off. Right? Like, oh, okay, you guys, okay, peace. Like, not even like, you guys got this. No, just, all right, I'm going to go now. Bye. Like, Dr. Fate just flying off. And Flash is like, you know, I'm sure there's some important thing he has to go deal with that he thinks is more important, you know, but really we should look after our own first. That's what it should be. And it doesn't really settle on either, because in the end, they both kind of come around to dealing with the same thing, but from different angles. Like, because this is a team comic, they never get so disparate in what they're doing that you can't follow them. So it shows you the two angles these different types of heroes take around to end up at the same problem. So it's like, okay, but should we use the utilitarian like John Stuart Mill, Dr. Fate? I'm going to go solve the biggest crisis I can see right now, which is Alan Scott going fucking crazy. Or do I be like the Flash and save my friends who then tell me Alan Scott is fucking crazy? Like, they show you both, but they don't really try to settle on which one's supposed to be more meritorious.
Well, the thing, too, is, like, all the characters do it. I think Dr. Fate definitely does it the most. But even Flash does it when his wife shows up.
Oh, yeah, he gets wife aggro. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Well, even Dr. Fate does.
Yeah. With Inza.
Inza? Mm-hmm. She's like, don't go again. You almost died last time. And it's like, okay, it's fine for... There's nothing wrong with loved ones...
not wanting their partner to die.
Right. But then, like, for Flash to say something like, to be like, well, look at Dr. Fate just leaving again. Like, when he does the same... When he does the same thing for different reasons. It's a bit, hypocritical, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And... You know, Hawkman does it too, right? Because I think when...
Shaira.
They're trying to keep Dr. Fate alive, and he's just like, peace out. He doesn't tell them where he's going or why. He's like, I have an errand to run.
So every single married person in this comic got wife aggro in the course of, like, 9 issues.
Yes.
Well, and even Alan Scott got secretary aggro a little bit.
That's true.
So the only person I think who doesn't have like a day job is Wildcat.
Yeah, he's a retired boxer.
And he like breaks his TV like a crazy old man.
And fucking Star Spangled Kid nails on the head. I think he's psychotic.
Yeah.
Well, and then like what does Flash say? He's like, come on guys, he's just bored. He's got to punch something.
Yeah, like that's normal.
Go get a fucking punching bag, Ted.
Yeah.
So, I don't think we've read too much of anything with Wildcat in it before. Is he really just a boxer?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's his power. He's a boxer.
He's the former heavyweight champion of the world, yeah.
And he... Okay.
No, he's supposed to have been, like, the unrivaled supreme best boxer of all time. So, but, not just, like, any old boxer, but he'd be, like the... Muhammad Ali versus Ted Grant would have gone Ted Grant.
Yeah, the thing too, he's not just like a boxer. Eventually he becomes like a martial artist. And then he ends up teaching a lot of the younger heroes how to fight. Like, he's the one who teaches Black Canary how to fight. Like, so, how to be a martial artist. But the thing is, we don't see that here. Here, he's just the crotchety old boxer. He wears a cat mask.
That's where we will get with this run on Justice Society. One of the biggest themes in all of the JSA from this point forward is the idea of teaching and passing on your wisdom as a hero to the next generation. And right here, the JSA is just starting to figure out that there's going to be a next generation. And I think they're not liking the idea yet.
Because that means that they're the old generation.
Yeah. So they're still trying to fight against it. But eventually they embrace it and they realize that what they need to do is teach this younger generation how to be better heroes. And they get there. And I think next issue, or next week and the week after, we'll really get that point. But for now, it's just Wildcat being like, are you fucking shitting me, Power Girl? Shut up, broad.
Oh, yeah, he calls her a broad at some point. I forgot that.
He calls her, like, three or four real sexist things.
Yeah.
not like bitch or anything terrible, but, like, you know, just, like if you're walking down New York Street and you're going to get catcalls, that kind of stuff. Broad, dame, things like that.
Yeah, and it, you know, in their interactions, it makes total sense that she's mad because he is super rude to her.
Yeah.
But, I mean, she comes on pretty aggressively as well. They deserve each other.
But to her credit, she comes on aggressively to everyone. Her fucking cousin, fucking Superman gets up there and she's like, get the fuck away from me. This is my show now, motherfucker.
I like how he just kind of ignores it, too. He's like, that's nice. Let's solve crimes.
Well, and then when he officially passes the torch to her, she's like, oh, wait a minute. You're not supposed to be nice to me. She's like, wait, that's not how it's supposed to go. At least that's how I read it. She was, like, sad that he, you know, I think she had a little bit of regret, maybe. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but she seemed to get, like, tripped up by the fact that Superman was like, yes, you're great. You can take my place on the Justice Society. I'm going to go retire.
Yeah, I think she had a bit more of a chip on her shoulder than she thought she did.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was not ready for that. You know?
Yeah. Which might also be part of the criticism. Like, all right, if you want to be a feminist, let's just give you the responsibility. And, oh, yeah, you're not going to really want it, are you? Like, that might be part of the... I don't know. This is the thing. This comic, for being from the 70s, if you want to do a super feminist reading, it gets real rough real fast. Mm-hmm. And it gets more rough because there's supposed to be a feminist character in this. Like, this is what they saw feminists as. Oh, it's terrible. So, what did you guys think of Dr. Midnight? Who was it before? Jen, you were asking about Dr. Midnight in a previous episode? I don't remember what it was.
It was a while ago, yeah. It was cool. Like, I feel
Dr.
like... Dr.
McKnighter?
Yes! Oh my god. That is the worst alias. No one will possibly guess that. He was... There. Yeah, I liked him. But I just feel like he was not like a main feature compared to like Dr. Fate.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Or even poor old Hourman.
Oh, our man.
He was, like, the saddest character in the comic.
I love our man. And there's, like, four of them now. I love all of the our men. Because they're the ballsiest motherfuckers ever, I think. Because, like, the way he works, he pops a pill called Miraclo, and it makes him super strong and, like, a superhero for an hour. So all you have to do is last an hour. Like, the way to beat him is in his name. They'd be like Superman naming himself Kryptonite Boy or something. Like, here's how you beat me. Just hang out for an hour. Just run away for an hour. And then you can beat the shit out of him. It's so ballsy, but...
What's the reason he can't take, like, more than one at a time?
They get super addictive.
Seems like a reasonable trade-off, honestly.
You like roid it out all the time. Like, yeah, Sarah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not so healthy.
No, it's not good for you. And apparently for non... So our man and his son both have a little bit of immunity because he developed the drug on himself. So he can pop like two or three a day and not get super addicted. But for most people, if you pop more than one in like a month, it's super addictive. So that's why they never like took it to market or anything. It's just not viable.
Okay. Which it's good then, that they have, like, an explanation.
Yeah, but then later on, they're like, oh, well, you know, you took, like, 4 a week for 10 years. I think you are addicted, buddy.
Oh. And that's when his story gets grimdark.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And then he meets Liberty Bell, and they fall madly in love, and it's great. Yep. I know too much about the JSA.
The JSA's pretty great. I like them. This one is kind of... I like it... Personally, I like the later incarnation of the JSA. This is not, like, the best one. I mean, like, Jen, it goes back to what Jen said, right? It's definitely a comic from the 70s.
Yeah.
If somebody just read the dialogue to you and didn't show you any, didn't tell you anything about it, didn't show you the pictures or anything, you would know.
Yeah.
You would know just from how long it took them to read you the issue.
Yeah.
God, yeah. I stopped reading the narration boxes.
Because all they did was describe what was in the picture.
That's all they did. Like, I did a little kid reading of this and zoned in on, like, the bold words. I was like, if it's bold, maybe I should look at it.
You're probably doing just fine in understanding this comic.
I've said this again and again, and it's not really the fault of comics in the 70s. It's just how the medium was. But I hate having to read the thing that I'm already watching happening. So when someone is like punching a guy and he's like, and watch me as I punch this man over and over, I'm just like, I don't have time for this. I'm a busy person. So I just end up skimming 70s comics. And, you know, they have such an interesting like 70s TV show vibe to them too. Like when they say the whole like, sets of lines like, and now we zoom over to this side of the city. It's just the way narration was done then, right? And, like, I can't fault it for that. It's just the way it was. I'm just glad we don't do it anymore.
And that's the way it was. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Poor JSA. You started out so rocky, but
hey, it's better. Yeah, it's become something really good. Like, some of the second and third generation characters are awesome. Like Stargirl is one of my favorite comic book characters.
She's awesome.
She comes. Mm-hmm. She's like spun out of whatchamacallit, Star Spangled Kid. Or Jack Knight Starman, who was the person prior to Stargirl. He was really that comic is really good. We should probably. I would think we should do that for the show at some point.
Yeah.
It was a Vertigo comic, actually.
We should do JSA side comics because we could do Sandman too. Sandman's amazing. Mm-hmm. Not the Neil Gaiman Sandman, but the
but the original.
Like a sleep gun and a gas mask Sandman.
Those are really good noir comics.
Oh yeah.
He was in the DC special. One that's
oh good trade. Good good because he's awesome.
He's in it for like a little bit. He fights Nazis for like.
I dressed up as that old school one for a Comic Con so many years ago, and nobody knew who I was because it's just a dude in a brown suit with like sleep like a gas gun and a gas mask, and I was just walking around and I couldn't fucking see shit because it's San Diego Comic Con. I have a fucking gas mask on, and some guy like grabs me by the shoulder and I'm like, whoa. He's like, "Are you dressed as fucking Sandman?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like. That's my character. And I'm like, what? He's like, I created that character 40 years ago.
Oh my God. Really?
And I'm like, that's awesome. And he's like, can I get a picture? And I said, fuck yes.
Oh, that is cool.
And I didn't have the wherewithal to like have him sign anything or anything. So somewhere out there, the creator of Sandman has a picture of me dressed as his character. And I have no idea if he ever posted it or anywhere I can get it. I don't know. But that's why you go to Comic-Con. Because that shit doesn't happen at most conventions. But yeah, I love that character. He's great. Yeah, and in this, there's not so much. And
you know,
that's the thing, is even the characters that are in this are different later on, too.
Except I just remembered who the greatest character in this was. Fucking Vandal Savage is in this.
Yeah, damn right.
Like, he's I really enjoyed seeing him. Yeah, it was good that he popped up. I did not actually expect that. I don't know, like... Oh, go on.
He's always cool and threatening and suave. I don't know. Even when you can tell he's winging it, he always seems like he has a plan. I guess that's just what happens when you're immortal. You're like, you know what? I'm going to start this plan with Camelot, and I'm going to end it in the year 3000. Let's go. Like, all right, cool.
Hey, whatever works. I feel like the thing about this comic is that a lot of the JSA members have made it into like modern day, and they're, you know, much loved characters like Jay Garrick and Alan Scott and Wildcat and of course Superman and Power Girl. But then like you meet others and you can really tell from reading this like who had staying power and who didn't, right? Because how often do we see Merlin appear these days, right? I mean, he pops up now and then, but if you said, oh, I'm reading a comic about Merlin, people wouldn't know which version of Merlin you were talking about. Yeah, they wouldn't know, like, it's the Marvel one.
There is that weird corner of DC with, like, Shining Knight and Etrigan and Morgana Le Fay and Arthur and Camelot. Like, there's this weird corner somebody somewhere along the line decided that that needed to be important for the DC universe, and nowadays it's like, fucking Shining Knight, where the hell did this guy come from?
You know what's funny? Actually, when they did New 52, they had a title called Demon Knights, I think, that was Shining Knight, who else was in it? Etrigan, Vandal Savage. Savage was in it. It was actually a great comic, and I think it just died because nobody knows who the fuck these characters are or why they should care about Shining Knight. And what's interesting about Shining Knight and that is Shining Knight was a trans character.
Huh.
Really?
It was a woman who was dressed... She was pretending to be a male knight because of the... I guess she's not a trans character. Well, no, I think she was because she wasn't really... She was kind of like... I feel like I'm putting my foot in my mouth now. Kind of like androgynous. There, that's the word I was looking for.
That's cool.
And characters were surprised, like when they found out that she was not a man. but it was a really, aside beyond that, it was a really, really good comic.
You know, I mean, you talk about how it probably died off because nobody knew who the characters were. I go back and I look at these older titles, and I realize that it's something that we don't have anymore these days on comic book shelves, are these titles put out by DC and Marvel and other big publishers that are just like All-Star Comics, Strange Tales, Detective Comics, like just generic stories where every 4 to 6 months they change up the lead character, and they can try new things. And I don't know when that stopped, but so many great characters came out. And, like, Amazing Tales, I think it was first appearance of Spider-Man. Like, just a comic title where they can throw shit at the wall and see what sticks. And those don't exist anymore. Now you have to kind of cultivate characters carefully, slowly, as side characters in a book. Wait for them to get more popular, bring them into a bigger team. If they're popular in the team, then maybe give them their own, like, mini-series, like 4 to 6 issues. If the mini-series is good, maybe you green light a year of an ongoing. Like, it's such a slow, slow, steady, cautious build for so many characters. They don't let new characters just kind of pop out of nowhere like this anymore. Like,
that's actually really true.
There would be no comic today for a new Power Girl to just happen. You know, like this. Just All-Star Comics.
I mean, it kind of makes sense. Like, if you look at the comics that were like that, like House of Mystery, I think used to be more like that back in the, I don't know when it was, like 70s, 80s? And now it's, like, way more plot-driven. And, like, either things are character or plot-driven, and I think they pick, like, the more, what are considered more indie titles, or, like, you know, not headliner titles, to have, like, kind of interesting or experimental plots. But it seems like the publishers really are just relying heavily on the big names to make the sales, and maybe it's just not within their, like, budget to produce a comic and just see what happens, right? Because if it's a flop, they've wasted a lot of money.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not that nobody tried. For this show, we read Creator Owned Heroes, which was like a project by Jimmy Palmiotti and some friends of his, and they were trying to do that, like, have a story that runs 4 to 6 weeks, and then if it works, do it again later, or do a new one, or whatever. And just, it was a like a comic magazine that had 2 or 3 concurrent stories in it. And I really liked it. I really liked the idea. I really like new heroes and new characters, and I'm excited about that kind of stuff. But I think you're right. For a lot of people, there's that lack of security, you know? Nowadays, you want to pick up the character that you know. Even if it's not a good comic, you know the character, you know you like the character, and even if the comic's not great, the character will still be something that you enjoy. So it's harder to spend your money on something random, especially in your poll box, like, week to week. And back then, it was easier, because this was primarily distributed, what, grocery stores? There weren't really comic book shops then, like there are today.
It was a newsstand thing, yeah.
Yeah, so back then, great, yeah, pick it up. Storylines are only 1 or 2 months old, so there might even be last month's on the shelf. You know, it's not like today where we have 6 to 8 month arcs. It was two weeks, 2 months maybe, you know? So it was much easier to kind of do this thing then. But man, I kind of wish that we still had something like this. I think it would be pretty neat.
Yeah.
I think that they tried every once in a while, like DC right before, New 52, they did a thing called Weird Worlds or something, and it was a normal sized comic, but it had 3 concurrent stories in it. Like, one of them was Lobo, and then the other two were other, like, kind of cosmic characters, and that was actually pretty good. But I think, like you said, Andy, people are kind of scared to commit to those kinds of things, and, you know, I think things kind of started to change in the mid-2000s. Where, like, Detective Comics just became a Batman book, or Action Comics became a Superman book. And so I think, you know, the publishers don't make a ton of money off comics anymore. They're more like media things. I mean, look at Marvel with Marvel Studios, right? So they probably don't want to spend so much on comics when it's not really the moneymaker anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It also seems like from the late 80s to the, and especially in the 90s, there was like this shift in how comics worked, where it went from being like little stories of the heroes fighting like little battles with their constant villains, like Iron Man versus Stilt Man, for instance, into these longer mythologized, like big canonical stories. You know, we get like the Frank Miller Batman, we get, you know, Superman and like X-Men, and, you know, people are starting to develop these longer plot lines and a lot more canon. Characters become more established and are replaced less and less, because, you know, once we got past Golden Age and Silver Age, you kind of have a character set and then you develop it, and then we get to like the 2000s and you have, like, for instance, Green Lantern. You can read, like, all those trades, and they form, like, a super cohesive storyline, which I don't think would have been the case, you know, like, in 1970.
So yeah, and also, but back then, they did all this stuff to the world and to characters that I don't think they kept track of more than, like, a few months at a time. Like, in this one, a giant fucking volcano showed up in the middle of, where was it, Seattle? One of those cities in the beginning? And I'm sure... Yeah,
it was Peking.
Peking? Okay.
Nobody kept track of that. There was no editor keeping track of that continuity, you know? Continuity and canon were something that only lasted a couple of issues in this. And if you needed to change something, fuck it. Change something and we'll just put in a little editor's note and explain it away. It's not something they worried or cared about, but it's something that that readers really care about now. you know? Because it makes the whole experience of reading these comics and reading more than one of them at a time, makes that whole experience feel more rich. Because you get more out of every story if you're familiar with the canon and the universe in which these stories are taking place. But that didn't exist back then because of the whole newsstand, grocery store, sales point. It's not... Nobody subscribed to these unless you were a real nerd. And they let you do that. I kind of like that. You could, like, tear out a page and mail it in. Fuck, I wish I could just do that. Just get all my comics mailed to me on a subscription. I'm sure I could, but it would cost more than, like, $3 a month. So, not doing that. But yeah, it's a fundamentally different way of building a story and building a world.
We see that with TV nowadays, too. I mean, you look at shows like Star Trek, even as recently as, TNG, it was very episodic. But then as the Trek shows came out after TNG, it slowly became, the overall story arc started to become more paramount, right? Mm-hmm. We see Deep Space Nine.
That was the studio that made those shows, yes.
Yes, I realized that I said paramount. But as we watch Deep Space Nine, the war becomes more important, and then Voyager, there's always the Borg, using the Borg to get home becomes really important. And then in Enterprise, it was like season-long stories with the Zindi and...
Yeah.
The Temporal Cold War. Jesus Christ, Temporal Cold War.
The worst.
Yeah.
The worst.
And now all TV shows are like that. You know, even quote-unquote Monster of the Week shows are... Each Monster of the Week helps move along the overarching story, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think people expect that kind of thing in other forms of storytelling, such as,
comics, video games, everything.
Or even movies. Look at the Marvel movie universe. Everything is connected, So it's the way of things now. And I'm not saying it's bad or good. I think both types of storytelling have their merits. This is just what we have now, and it'll probably change at some point in the future too.
Yeah, but it's that big canonical universe that makes those all-star comics kind of titles impossible to write, right? Because if you create a character and is in the world for 4 to 6 weeks and then nobody really likes him or her, and then you never write that character again, that character now exists in this universe and is part of this continuity, whether you want them to be or not, you know? And in an era when your fans and your readers keep track of all of this stuff for you in a way, it gets tough to do that too. Cause I'm sure even if most people don't like the character, some people will, there'll be some Tumblr devoted to that character. And for months and months, you're going to get people claiming that character should be brought back somewhere else or put on part of a team or this, that, or the other thing. It's so much tougher to introduce new characters in this kind of environment without that slow burn, without that intentional buildup. You can't just throw shit at the wall the way you could back then. It's much, much more difficult.
True.
But I'm glad they threw Power Girl at the wall, because boy did she stick. God, that sounded so creepy.
Yeah. That was grade A weird. Sorry.
Yeah. Star Spangled Kid didn't, but I feel like Star Girl sure did.
I'm okay with Star Spangled Kid not being in there. Like,
yeah, he was.
He
just
seemed
weird.
Like a nice guy, but he was kind of lame.
Yeah, I mean, would you really want a sticky Star Spangled Kid?
No,
because I know what made him sticky.
Is it his cosmic rod?
That's the spangled part of his name.
His cosmic rod and his infatuation with Power Girl.
Yeah, he was like hitting on her by the end.
Oh yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Oh, good times.
So, you guys ready to rate this?
Yeah.
All right, David, how about you go first?
Oh, god damn it. Well, this
fine,
is
Jen, go
rate.
First.
Okay. I gotta give this a 2, and I admit a bias here. I am... I can't handle 70s comics. I think that, thinking about it, like, this was actually a pretty good one. We had a lot to talk about, and it spurred some pretty good discussion. So, you know, I do give it credit for that, because I think one of the downsides of it is that it's vague in what it's trying to get across. On the other hand, that makes for some really interesting talking points. So, in my book, that comes out like as a neutral. The art's pretty good, but the publishing, you know, like just the printing of the time, wasn't up to snuff. So it's hard to give a good critique of the art as well. So the reason I'm rating this below average is, you know, just it's personal bias. I don't want to sit there and read all the text, and it's neat to see some of the stories, but some of the others just don't have enough interest to keep me hooked. So, you know, it's like we've been saying, like, you gotta throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks, but then the stuff that doesn't can be a detractor. So, yeah, a 2.
All right. David?
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it a 2 also. I mean, I really like the JSA, but this is not a strong outing. And I think, like Jen, it's very hard to read stuff from, you know, from the 70s, the 60s. I don't think it's just the way that they're telling the story just doesn't appeal to me, and it makes it very difficult to read. Like this was what do we read, like 9 issues?
Mm-hmm.
Usually I can get through 9 issues pretty quick if I really try, and this was
work.
It was a slog to get through.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was just jumping all over the place. It just was hard. I didn't like it. But the comic has value, as you know, because it's a comic, and it, you know, it kind of shows how we got to where we are now. But fortunately, we have things like Wikipedia, so I can kind of dabble in the old stories and see what I like to try putting the work in to read this, and if not, I can just skip it and continue with the Wikipedia article or not. So
yeah.
I'm just gonna give it a 2. But the art was really good. You know, it was very clean art. Even though the you know, it had the muted colors because of printing. I read it the Comixology version, and it looked good, and it was easy to look at, but it was not a great read. So yeah, 2.
Yeah. I'm going to give this a 2.5. I don't know why. I feel like 2.5 is average. And I, you know, 70s comics are pretty bad, but they're not 90s. You know, they're not late 80s. I feel like in terms of how bad a dated comic can be, this one does pretty well. They did a decent job of trying to get a good team on here. Wally Wood's a good artist. Keith Giffen's a great artist. Bob Layton's a good artist. And Jerry Conway's a good writer. He's a legendary writer. They did a really good job of trying to get a good team on here. And I think they hadn't gotten the hang of writing teams, you know? How do you get 5 people on the page at once and make them all interesting at the same time? You don't. Split them up. Fuck it. Let's send them all different places. For me, that was the thing that didn't work in this. Like, let's send these 2 guys here, these 2 guys there, and fuck, what are we going to do with the Hour Man? Let's just leave him on monitor duty again. You know, whatevs. And that's just what kind of left me in the lurch. And as soon as I would actually get interested in a storyline, they'd be like, and now let's cut halfway across the globe to South Africa. I'm like, no, you just got interesting. But I think if you cut them back into the correct order, or the times when it started to get rolling and the team was more or less together, especially by the end of this, by issue 67, when they're fighting Xanadu or whatever the name was, that wasn't a great storyline, but at least was compelling because they were all on the same hunt together. They were doing the same fight from different angles. And that part of it was kind of interesting. And Power Girl on the boob window. So that's a 0.5. 2.5. You know, I don't have a fight night or anything for this week. Do you guys?
No.
I don't have quotes. Oh, man. Quotes would have been actually pretty good for this one. But I didn't write anything down, so we're not going to.
Let's call it a Thanksgiving sabbatical.
Yeah.
Taking a Thanksgiving week off, because we're recording just after Thanksgiving. Even though this won't come out for the next week. But we'll take a sabbatical. We'll start quotes up next week. Next week as we read JSA, The Golden Age by James Robinson. This is, so what we read this week is the origin of the team, and they kind of died away in popularity, especially with the Infinite Earths thing and all of that. And next week you're going to read JSA The Golden Age by James Robinson, which is supposed to be the revitalization of the Justice Society, the storyline that brought these characters back into the universe after decades of being irrelevant. Well, maybe not decades, maybe like a decade and a half of being less than relevant. So we're going to read that next week, and then after that we're going to read the Geoff Johns JSA Black Rain, which is totally tonally different, but actually part of a really great run. For my money, like, this was a weird intro to JSA, but if you are interested in JSA and how probably most of us think of them, pick up that Geoff Johns JSA omnibus. It's a thing of beauty.
But well, I'm looking forward to this James Robinson run, because yeah. he's a great writer. I mentioned the Ted Knight Starman. Jack Knight. He's the guy who wrote that run from 1994 to 2001. It was a long, long run.
Yeah.
It was really, really good.
Really, really good. So, yeah, that's it for this week. Next week, JSA, The Golden Age. Until then, everybody, goodbye.
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 Thank him for me.